Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
What is good, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. If you are new to this podcast, I would absolutely love it if you hit subscribe, share it with your friends. If you enjoy it, give us a little review. It means the world. Keeps the podcast going and keeps everybody listening and getting more and more bigger artists to tell more and more interesting stories. So this week on the podcast, the one and only Hayden James. Hayden, I've known... like I've been aware of his music for the last few years, and I'm truly amazed with what he does and the line he sits in the electronic music scene. I speak about this on the podcast with him, and he is in the process of finishing his third studio album, which is an amazing achievement. We spoke about having hit records, Something About You, his most recent biggest record, We Could Be Love, Just Friends, and just kind of talking about the process of writing records, dealing with the pressure of having hit records, touring, family life, balance of writing music and having kids and having a wife, and then having to tour around the rest of the world and also live in Australia. We spoke about a bunch of things to do with the process of writing an album, which I always find super interesting. So without further ado, Hayden James. Mr. Hayden James, what's cooking, man?
Mate, I'm great. I'm great. How you doing?
Yeah, good, man. I'm good. Thanks for doing this. What time is it then right now?
It is 9:30 p.m. Sydney.
It's not too bad.
It's not that late, but when you go to bed at like 8 p.m. usually, it's a bit late.
What is this about Australians? Like every time I go to Australia, like everyone's like goes to bed really early and up at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, I have two kids, so it's makes sense. So that's the whole thing. Yeah, because they're great sleepers, but they get up at like 6:30, and if I'm in the studio working till, and sometimes I do till like midnight, I've got 6 hours, and I'm like, it's just a countdown timer just straight away, so it's a bit difficult.
is sleep like something that you battle with being a touring artist?
You know what, I've been, because I usually do a lot of like Sydney to LA, and I kind of, when I first started doing it, I had a whole like just method of just like, this is how we do it, blah, blah, blah. But then I get a bit stressed if I like missed a sleep on a plane and it'd screw me up. But I've been pretty good the last couple of years. And it's like, basically the thing is like exercise and don't drink. It's weird that how that works. But I did recently do Sydney, Austin for like 2 days, and then to London. And I was in London for a week, and I basically woke up at like 1 a.m. every morning in London, and that was a shock, because I hadn't had that much. Yeah, that was really tough.
Yeah, the time changes are different. They're pretty tough from America, from England to Australia. It can be rough, can't it?
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, it's kind of opposite. So, yeah, I'm actually coming over for like a week at the end of April. So I'll let you know. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, let me know when you're in town as well, because I might be around. Are you coming for touring?
I'm just coming for one show. This is the thing about living in Australia. It's like, oh, this show's really good. I should do it, but it's a 24-hour flight. It's I'm playing at the Drum Shed, so I'm like, I got to do that, right?
Yeah, that'd be a big one. That festival, that venue is. I've not been, but I've only seen videos. But it's ridiculous. Mm.
It looks crazy. I can't pass it up. And it was. No. It's like the Our House, like James Hype and Medusa.
Yeah,
and that's a great lineup too. So I'm like, I got to be on it. So I'm doing a bit of like a riding trip around it. So yeah I'll let you know. We should.
Yeah, let me know if you're in town. We'll definitely jump in. How do you find that? I want to like talk to you about that with being an Australian artist. Most people that have success out of Australia or in Australia then transforms into the rest of the world, UK, Europe, America, generally leave Australia because of Australia's, although it's such a big country, it's such a small population to kind of build a career in. How have you found that?
I mean, there's so many different ways to answer that question. It's the start of my career, obviously, was like, you know, I'm an Australian artist and I wasn't touring and I couldn't tour because I wasn't getting booked anywhere else in the world. So I kind of, you lean in on your own skills and the people around you. And that, that's kind of how I learned to do what I do now. So that worked out. But also some of the biggest stuff I've written is definitely with artists from the UK and the US. That was like, I guess, it was kind of before COVID. I did a bunch of trips, like writing trips to LA and met some people. And then I think it's really great when it's hard to have a studio session with someone you've never met over Zoom.
Yeah.
Even like, it's just quite difficult to get the vibe. But if you've at least met once, even for a coffee and you kind of just like have that initial chat, then you can get into that vibe. And I feel that that's a bit easier. So I did do that before COVID, which allowed me to kind of lean in on those relationships a little bit more. But I guess you can't beat the, you know, fly over there and be there in person. And that's what I've been doing, you know, the last couple of years after COVID. It's been great.
How do you plan, like, how do you schedule out your writing to your touring to family life and everything like that? Because I know it's only let's say for instance, 24-hour trip. Like, although it's in the grand scheme of life, it's not that hard, right? Like we will make it out to be this really hard thing, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not hard.
Totally.
But how do you schedule that out? Do you work on specific touring times or like, how is that for you?
Yeah, it's hard. Well, it's about just getting ahead of it and having a team that kind of understands what I need. So, having the agents that kind of like work with me and understand that, you know, I want to be home. Like I love music and I love touring and I love writing and all that kind of stuff. But like, obviously nothing beats being with my kids and my family. So that's the number one priority. Next year, my eldest son goes to like big school, like kindergarten, and we won't be able to. So at the moment we kind of travel all together still, which is great. So if I've got like a tour in the States, we'll all be in LA and I'll just like jot around the place. But from next year, we won't be able to do that. So in my head, I've got the grand plan of like, oh, I can do two weekends in the States and just be away for 11 days.
Yeah.
So it'll be kind of like I work in like a mine or something. It'll be like, I'm away for 2 weeks and I'm back for two or three. And then we'll just see how it goes.
That's such an Australian analogy.
I was thinking that. I'm like, oh, no, no.
You've got to explain that to anybody that's not Australian.
Yeah, well, in Australia, there's lots of mining. So there's like, you know, iron ore, like that's probably the biggest thing. But a lot of these miners all these mines are like in very remote places around Australia. And they have to go for two or three weeks at a time and not be home. And it is so specific, isn't it? and then they get to come home and they'll like be home for 2 or 3 weeks. So it's, yeah, mining and touring as a DJ is exactly the same.
It is exactly the same.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, it's kind of like, it's just, you know, I just got to, you figure it out as you go kind of thing. In terms of like figuring out when we tour and when I write and all that kind of stuff, I don't really write. I've listened to your podcast a bunch, and I think it was James Hype that said something like, "Oh, I wrote 5 tracks on the last flight." I'm like, "What, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing wrong? What's going on?"
I hate people like that. I can't do it.
I don't get that. I don't know. I'm at home, and this is like a room within a room. Got all my gear and stuff, and I love just being in here. Although I do like to rent an Airbnb or come to London for a week and rent someone's studio and just like be in the one place. I can't kind of travel too much and write. I like to be somewhere for that week and kind of go from there.
Yeah.
So it's always different. I'm writing my third album right now, and it's definitely different to the last two. Just because I write differently, there's different techniques I've, you know, come across, or I've found that I write with someone really well, and we've written a bunch of tracks together, and so it's always different.
With regards to writing albums, I'm kind of interested in getting into this with you. So your first album was Between Us, and then your second album was Lifted. It came out in 2022. Yeah. Process of writing an album, like, is it the case of it is, because I've just done it myself.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah,
but have you finished?
Yeah, it's finished and everything. Like, it's been in the works for a long time, but I can now say it's finished because it's coming out this year.
Sick.
But yeah, what's your how do you kind of from literally the deciding to write an album, like, how does that process start? Because I think that's for me is the most interesting part of it for an artist. Yeah, why? It's also sorry to butt in as well. It's also really interesting where you sit in this scene, because, and this is no, whatever I'm going to say, please don't be offended by it, because it's not me being offensive, but like, you sit in a very niche kind of house music, but songs like commercially accessible music, but it's not super cheesy, and and it's not super underground, if that makes sense. But you sit in this like really nice packaged kind of sound that just works really well for you. And I'll be honest, I don't see many other people doing what you're doing. And I kind of want to like work out how the fuck you got there as well. and how that kind of got to the point of like, okay, now I'm an album artist.
Yeah. Thank you. I always honestly have felt like an outsider to like the house world and all my other friends that travel and stuff. They're, you know, DJs, and they write house music and dance music and, you know, just, very, very different music to me. And I've always found, I like the kid in the playground that no one really wants to play with, which is hard. And I've found myself a lot going like, oh, I want to be like that. And then they're going, no, I want to be like you. And then I've got my manager and my team going like, dude, you have something so unique here. Like, lean into that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a battle. It's kind of a little bit of a battle in my head, because it's like, you know, you can't, you know, unsee the insane success that you can get from just writing a pretty simple dance record.
Yeah.
And I find that stuff, not that it's, I'm not taking away from it, but it's like, I find writing music and creating that emotional connection much more difficult. And crafting something that people could listen to over a lifetime, more so than just like in a moment. So, and
I think that's the thing though, isn't it, as well, is like, you're writing songs, whereas it's changed a lot, the scene, especially the house and techno scene. For me, and I'd like to get your take on it, for me, it's a lot of music in the house scene, or the electronic space, is kind of very throwaway now. And it feels like it's all it's a purposely written. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go in the studio, write a record for this label or for this playlist or for this TikTok moment or for this whatever I need to achieve to get out of that record, rather than the other way around where it should be is like, I need to write a record to make myself feel this or to make the audience feel this or however that is. But
yeah, where's the Chemical Brothers of now, right? You know, it's like, man. I mean, they're still touring and doing great things and still releasing, of course, but it's like, I totally agree. It's like, where are the artists that, and there are a lot, but it's so hard to find these people through all the noise.
Mm.
And that's what everyone always says. It's just, yeah, it's really hard. And that's what I try and do is like, just the reason I write albums is to give people something more. And to give them like something that they can live with, than rather than like, here's something that's going to smash for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, and same with like production as well. I remember like distinctly writing Something About You and writing a whole bunch of like production with it, or like just adding things and getting to a point where I'm like, you know what, that's not going to stand up in 5 years. I want this record to just go. And actually, like, I was listening to something in the car the other day, and then just with the algorithm, it came on. And I hadn't listened to it in so long. Shock horror, like, DJs don't listen to their own music a lot. But I listened to it, and I was like, holy shit, like, that sounds like, how do I get that sound again? I was, like, surprised how great it sounds, and it's 9 years old.
Wow. 9 years. I didn't know it was that old.
Yeah, end of 2014, so nearly 9 years. And and yeah, I was kind of shocked by how like simply beautiful the production was, and I actually downloaded, like, I've got the stems on a Dropbox, and I like downloaded them again to like check out the drums and stuff, because I'm like, this sounds awesome. Do it again, dude.
That's the worst when you've had a really big record and you're like, how do I recreate that? But I think this is the issue that we're talking about is that what we're seeing is because Spotify show our streams, right? We're like,
dangerous.
And we are like comparing ourselves to ourselves to a certain extent. Like my biggest streaming record isn't necessarily my biggest record.
If that makes sense. No, that's it. Yeah.
But the thing is like,
and it might not be the record that you spent so much time producing as well. Like Something About You and like Just Friends, they were more like a feeling and just like, I just put the keys down. I was like, that sounds good and that feels right to me. It wasn't like, all right, that could be like a placeholder and then I'll figure it out later. It was like, no, that was the moment and I like played them and that was it, you know? And I think it was about not thinking about it too much and getting the song across. That's what I do a lot is like, if you listen to my demos, it doesn't sound great, but it's like, I don't need it to sound good. I just need you to go, wow, that sounds interesting or different or just makes you feel something, you know?
I think that's it. It evokes a feeling that other things aren't doing right now at that time. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, totally, totally. So it's hard being a part of this world and seeing artists come out with stuff, you know, like if you just follow one artist, they might come out with something every month and it's like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, an artist that writes an album, it's like, well, you know, I'm going to release one album every 2 years, kind of maximum.
Yeah.
Me personally. And how do you fill that void? It's by remixes, by doing edits and stuff. It's like, yeah, sure, we can do that. But I don't know. I personally enjoy an album. It's very scary. That's what I was saying before, to start an album. I liken it to like writing a book or something. It's just blank page. What do you want to say? I think, it's a personal journey that I think nearly kills you mentally until you get to the other side and you're like, oh wow. Cause you live with these songs for quite a while as well. You don't just like, I write an album over like nearly a year.
Yeah.
And so you'll have some of the songs that are a year old and it's like, do you like it anymore? Or like things will change or you might listen to something that will affect the way you do something. And so the records have got to be really strong for you to like it at the end of the day.
Yeah. And then once it's finished, I know we're skipping a way down and I want to go back on a certain things, but once it's finished and then you've got a bunch of records that you actually love yourself. Like, there's, for me, there's a relationship between an album records and club singles, which is just completely different, like, in my in my mind. But then for me, it's like that.
Agreed.
It's the nerves of like, is anyone else gonna like this?
Or play it, you know? That's the thing as well, is like, oh, I've written these songs, but they don't live in the DJ world. And but that's the kind of, that's kind of what you want at the same time too. It's like, I want people to like,
it's the whole point, right?
Exactly. But it's, at the end of the day, it's like, well, hold on, I just want people to listen to it, you know? That's my main thing, is like, I want people to listen to it. I want, and that's when I write something, it's like, I want people to be able to listen to it in the morning, getting ready, at lunch, at dinner, pre-drinks, in a club if you want. But like, my main thing is not club, let's go.
It's really interesting that.
Because that is my space as well. It's like, so it's kind of hard when I do go and play these shows, and like, I've been playing some really great shows in the US, some big shows, and I kind of lean in towards the more like heavier stuff, and kind of, and it's like, no, you should play your own music, dude. You know, it's like,
it's really, it's really all strange, man, because we're in this like, we're in this world where performing is so easy to, it's so easy to DJ in a sense, especially nowadays. It's right. Literally like there's, you can write a record, you can write a record today, put it on your USB stick, play it tomorrow. Easy. Yeah. Easy as that.
Yeah.
There's the process of like, so it's allowed an album artist like yourself that potentially 10 years ago wouldn't be touring as a DJ. You'd be touring as a live act, right? As quintessential album acts would do in that world.
Yeah.
But it's now allowed you to kind of play very easily in front of a lot of fucking people and get your music heard by a lot of people. But then it's the music that you're writing isn't necessarily fit for that lineup or for that genre or for whatever you're trying to do. So I can definitely see it, and I can relate to that as well. But it's like, how do you get around that?
Well, I mean, you just do your own tour. So you just put your own nights on. So, I mean, that's what I've always done with the release of an album, is like a world tour.
Yeah.
So obviously hit Australia pretty hard, and then a lot, like a, you know, big US run and a bit of Europe. And that's the most fun, because obviously then you've got people that have bought a ticket to see you, and that's it, you know. It's, and so you can tailor the night any way you like. So that's really exciting, to play your own shows, I think, and to play hard ticket shows, because it's like, well, these people paid to see you.
Yeah.
Give everything you've got, you know. What's difficult, and what I've kind of grown to like, I really enjoy, is playing clubs, because it's kind of like the off season of like what an album artist does, I guess, is be able to play some of your records, and like maybe you do some edits and things in that different environment. But it's tricky. It is tricky, and it's always, I always second guess myself, or I'm always nervous before. I'm like, oh, am I playing the right stuff? It's like, yeah, dude, like, relax. People have come to see you.
It's really weird.
It's
because
hard. It's tough.
Because it's where the lines are blurred with being a DJ, right? And it's like, if you went to see the Rolling Stones, they're not going to go and play Bob Marley, right?
No.
If they did, it'd be fucking sick. But like,
yeah,
in the grand scheme of things, they're not going to. Whereas with DJs, it's like, sometimes it's in the world where we're at, it's like, well, should I play that single that's like 115 BPM? But like,
you know what? Well, yeah. Like, Something About You is 115 BPM, and I don't think I've played it in like 4 or 5 years in a DJ set. I do like edits of it, and like, so I've got the acapella, obviously, and I'll put it over something that is like current, and it's a vibe, and people are like, oh shit, like, I know that song, and I know that song, that's cool, and that feels really good. But because it's slow, it's just a different record. You can't just put that up. I mean, but here's the thing as well, right? Like, we're talking about that, but it's like, sometimes people love that. It's like stop everything and then put that original on, and that's huge.
Yeah. It's a moment.
See, we overthink it. Exactly. So I mean, many times I've had, like, I look at my DMs after a show and just to, like, repost some stuff, and there'll be people going, like, why didn't you play that? And they're angry about it. I'm like, yeah, I should have. No.
There is that, isn't it? It's like the audience comes first when it comes to performing, I think, for me, is like, they are paying a ticket to see us play, and at the end of the day, we need to entertain. And for me, that is when in a live show, the audience comes first all the time. But I want to go back to the process of writing the album. So the why for you, the why was more so about wanting to make music that lasts a long time, and kind of
I found myself, like, when I sit down and write music and this album, what I'm doing as well, I wanted to, like, focus more on, like, let's do more club stuff. I end up just churning out stuff that's not like that at all. It's like, it's like Hayden James songwriting. Like, it's like, it's, there's vocals and there's, you know, verses and breeze and choruses. And I was like, oh, okay, this is just how I write music. Don't try and change. Don't pigeonhole myself too much. It's like, that's just how it naturally comes out. So just do that. So I found myself, I had, like, you know, 5 or 6 records that are like, oh, that might be a single or whatever, but they all work really well together and they all make me feel a certain way. So it's like, that's a package, like, use that, and bottle it up, and people have really enjoyed them. So I love it. I mean, I've written more and put out more singles between Lifted and this next album, which I'm still writing, than I ever have before, which has been super fun. And that's, you know, I was living in LA for a little bit, so I'd been, you know, I'd had a lot of sessions, and it's like, oh, these are really cool songs. Let's just put them out as singles and kind of roll them out every, like, 6-8 weeks, which has been good. And
how do you find the difference?
None of them are going to be on the album.
How do you find the, like, difference in that, in, like, your attitude towards those records and how you expect them to perform, or how you, like, is that something you kind of battle with?
Yeah, I think, when you release just a standalone song, it's got to be pretty special, right? Or, like, you've got to think it's got to be pretty special. That's a good question. I think there's a lot of pressure because it's just that one piece, and it's like, all right, here we go. This is it. There's nothing else supporting it. That's kind of how I've done this album as well. I've wanted, like, every song to be, like, a possible single, which is, it's hard because, like, all of the amazing collaborators and vocalists I'm working with, like, is mine a single? I'm like, oh, I don't know yet. it's which is a good problem to have, but it's definitely when you're releasing just singles, I think it's We Could Be Love. I had probably, like, 5 or 6 different, very different versions of that record, and I eventually just went with my gut, and it's quite different to what I've ever done before. And some people on the label and some friends and stuff are just not too sure about it. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I feel this is right. And then it went like hottest record of the world with Danny Howard. And I was like, hell yeah. That for me, that moment was just like, believe in yourself.
It's a big fuck you to everybody else, huge. Right? It's
like, dude, I think I cried. I was like, it was such a good moment. Yeah. It is a big fuck you. It's just like, do your thing. It's like, you're the guy that wrote it. You're the guy that has the streams. Like, believe in yourself.
Yeah. And I think I'd like to get your thoughts on that, is obviously with your first album, Between Us, and then the difference between Us and Lifted, and then the process of the album that you're working on now. How many more cooks get put in the kitchen on a label side, on a team side, on other people's opinions, and how does that actually affect the way you write and the way you're kind of looking at the records that you're writing?
I've been fortunate to have the same team on every album, which is great. So I'm with Future Classic, who's an Australian independent record label, and they now have a footprint in the States as well. So it's the same people I've been dealing with, which is great. And we obviously know each other well. Same with my management, Luke Allen at Red Light and my team. We've all been together from that first album, which is great. And they know me and how to deal with me if I'm being annoying or frustrated or whatever. But at the end of the day, with the music, I find they're like the parents, right? And I'm the kid just running around the playground, not knowing what he's doing. But the music at the end of the day, the great thing about being a solo artist is it's just up to you.
Yeah.
So people can have their opinions and all that kind of stuff. I think the biggest and the hardest thing is to learn to listen to your own voice, because everyone's going to have these things. I remember writing Just Friends and I played it to a bunch of mates and they were like, dude, this is way too many lyrics. I'm not even going to remember all these. It's not good. And I'm like, oh, okay. I disagree with you massively on that. And then look what it did, you know? Yeah. It's, you just got to learn how to listen to yourself. Because if you keep changing stuff based on what other people are saying, obviously everyone's got a very different idea of what a good song is, and it's so subjective. And that's the great thing about this art. Yeah. So, yeah, you just got to figure out what you want, and that's it. Because end of the day, everyone's going to say something different, and you'll be stuck if you'll be creatively stuck if you listen to these people.
Do you play your records to a lot of people beforehand? Or is there just a handful of people that you kind of have?
My wife, Jen, I play everything to. And I've got we have a Jenny dance approval. If you really like something, she'll I'll know. So, which is good. It's never steered me wrong. So that's awesome. I actually play, I won't send records to DJ mates or band mates or anything like that. I'll send them to friends that aren't in the industry at all, that don't really listen too much to music. The ones that the records that I know, I'm trying to go I think this could be really something and a more of a mass audience. And so I send records to people like that. I also do things kind of tricky things where if I have people over for a barbecue or something, I'll set up a playlist and slide in a couple of demos in between. And, sometimes people be like, can you change the playlist or what's that song? So yeah, it's dicey sometimes, but I like to just do that as well, because how often do people go, listen to this record, and everyone just sits there and doesn't say anything? That doesn't happen. That's not natural. And it feels forced and weird. So when I do play stuff to people, I either go, listen to it in your own time, how you listen to music, whether it's going to work or going for a run, whatever. Just do your own thing and get back to me instead of hey, let's be quiet and listen to this record. So
there's that rule of three, isn't there? Whereas you have to hear something three times before you can actually have an opinion on something. And it, for me, that is massively the case. I'm sure you've had it where you've been sent a record and you're like, oh, I can't stand that. Or you've heard somebody release a record and then you're like, oh, I can't stand that. And then you hear it in the gym and you're like, oh, what's that record? And then you hear it on the radio, like, oh, fuck, I actually really like this record. And realistically, you're just being an absolute snob when you first heard it. And
because everyone else likes it. I was actually, there's one record that I was like, that I don't get it wrong often, I feel like if it's a good song, I'm like, I just, you will know. There's one time that I was like, this song sucks. And then a couple of months later, I'm like, holy shit, this is incredible. It was Zoo Faded.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, that was a record. I think that was 10 years ago as well. But that was my downfall.
It's definitely definitely interesting that how that happens. And I think it's also it's perfectly normal to say is when you see somebody having a bit of success, you're like, oh, I could have done that. That record shouldn't be doing that well. Mine should be doing better than that, blah, blah, blah. But I think the crux of it is you know what? It's a fucking good record. If it's a great record, it's going to do well.
100%.
How?
That's it. And just going back to that, it's for me, it's always been about the music.
Yeah.
So you can have, now it's a bit more, unfortunately, with socials and all this kind of stuff. But if you nail the music, that's it. That for me, a lot of people will say oh, you only need a record to be 50% good. And then, there's all that bullshit. But it's you know what? if a, like a good song will always cut through, always. Yeah, you need the right team and the right people to push it and all that kind of stuff. But like, if you want a record to live, like that is how you do it, right? Yeah. The good fucking song.
Yeah.
Spend time writing the record.
I think also nowadays, I think you definitely have the like social aspect where it's like, yeah, if you have an okay record, but you have great socials, you have, you're good at TikTok, you're, you have this huge, like, or you have the ability to create a viral moment, right? It's very easy, not very easy. It's actually very hard to do that. But if you're in that situation, it's easy to make an average record do well, really well, right?
I think the difference between the same viral moment and an okay, like average record and an amazing record is just the lifespan of the record.
Exactly. That's literally what I was going to say is like that, that record can, and we've seen this over the, especially over the last year, whereas like you have all these like edits that are popping off that are doing really well for like a month. And then, and then you're like, well, no one's listening to that record anymore.
But imagine, and again, no diss to anyone that it's doing this or touring off this, because like that, it's awesome to just tour up and do this stuff, right? Yeah. Absolutely. But if you've, if you're not fame, but just like popularity, I guess, is based off just super quick stuff like that. That's like, oh, this is just churning out like, you know, every 3 weeks. I'd find that quite difficult. Yeah. I'd find it much easier to tour and come to clubs and play shows based off a whole history of records that span over years. Of course, I mean that's of course, but it's neither here nor there. I mean, like, you know.
No, I agree. I think for me, it's longevity.
I don't know what I was trying to say.
No, you know, I guess I think what I think you're trying to say is just longevity. And I think for me is like, let's say for
that's been a key for me.
Yeah, let's say for instance, like Something About You, like you said, was released like nearly 10 years ago. Like there's not many people that can have a record that's that lasts that long in the market that we're living in now. Like even some of the biggest artists that, like, not to name names, but even some of the biggest artists that have, they're literally the biggest artists in the DJ world right now, like the they're releasing so often because they need to keep that wheel churning.
It's just a different business, right?
Yeah, it throws, and there's nothing wrong with this, but for me it's like it actually devalues your music, because it's like, well, actually, no, I've made this record and this record stands the test of time, and it will stand the test of time forever. Like for me, like I know the Camel Fat Boys don't play Cola, but for me, like Cola was like one of the last ones of, that we had of that, where it was like, it just lasted forever.
Yeah.
And it's still great.
I haven't seen them play. I've never seen them play, but, I'm not surprised they don't play Cola, but no, why do you think that is? Like, I mean, because it is, it's not the same level, but that's my Something About You in terms of like, and I don't play that. I guess I know the answer.
Yeah, why?
I feel it's overplayed, and I feel that people don't need to hear it anymore.
Yeah, but this is such a weird attitude to have, and this is what I was going to say, right? This is
so weird.
Only DJs would have this attitude, because like Kanye is going and performing all of Kanye's biggest hits when he goes and performs.
Yeah.
Jay-Z, Beyonce is going to, she's not going to play her Lemonade. She's not like Taylor Swift's not going to play whatever her biggest records are. It's so weird to me. And you know what? Like, I toured quite a lot of MK in like around 2018. We were on the same management at that time. And it was the one thing that I actually took from the management that came out of that. They were like, you have to play your records. You have to play your biggest records. And I was like, why? And they're like, we're not DJs anymore. We're a show. And people are coming to buy tickets to see you play you. And they listen to your music, and this is the only chance they're going to get to hear you play you. And that's interesting.
You know what? That's yeah. Wow. I'm going to start playing my own music again. but it's you know what? A lot of the records I think that I write that are very, and kind of like the MK stuff too, I guess, that are very vocal driven.
Yeah.
Unless they're really made for the dance floor, no one else is playing them either. No. Right. No other DJ, because it's just a different vibe. But it's, you know, like even like the Sonny Federas and stuff like that. Like there are some records, obviously, that like lots of DJs play, but then there are ones that's like, oh, just they play.
Yeah.
So it's important that
you play,
you know, as that artist, play the fucking record.
Yeah. It was always interesting, like watching Mark play. Like every time he played one of his records, the crowd just changed. And like he goes in between like playing club records and his own records, but like it, the atmosphere just changed in the room and you're like, oh, I get it now. Like, they're here to
see
that. We're
thinking too hard. We are really thinking about it too much. And as well, like it's, you're up there. But like most people I know play pretty sober. So you're up there like in a very different state as well. And I think you forget that the people in the crowd, a lot of them are like, you know, having fun and on drugs or just completely hammered and just like, and just excited and want to react to your songs too.
Mm.
So I think we're just overthinking them sometimes, like the sets. I don't know.
Calvin's great at it. He's great when he's playing live. You're just like, I remember like listening.
Oh, he just
plays hits.
Bang, 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 bang. Yeah. And that's what I want as well. It's like, yes.
The thing is, you can. See? Exactly. This is the thing. We're like so contradicting ourselves because it's like everybody wants the biggest hits, but like.
That's amazing. All right. Well, we've done it. Like managers have told us all the time. It's like, we've just figured it out. We're going to play our own records.
Report I'm back. Excited. Let me know how it, okay. Let me know how it goes.
Okay. Yeah. It's just like, didn't work. Didn't work out.
So album three, sorry to like holler on at this.
No.
But like I'm really interested in the process, and you give yourself a year so you decide to write an album, then what?
The hard thing is you've got to wait. So it's like, you know, I've got a deadline coming up real soon, but it's the record, like the album is not going to be out for like another 4.5 months after that.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, obviously the singles will start to roll out and then the album. So you build like the campaign, but it's hard to sit on that music and be so excited. And that's why I guess now the having the social aspect of it is like, oh, cool. I can actually tease this stuff and like kind of release the record in a different way before it's actually out. And that's kind of the goal too, right? I guess these days is having those viral moments on the TikToks and all that kind of stuff where it's like, I need this now, you know, those are the records that really pump. It's like, you need to sell them that way. Cold, like, how would you say it? It's like cold releasing a record is very difficult because, you know, people haven't heard it and you just wanted to shove it down their throats. Like, yeah, it's a bit. So having that like build is obviously kind of the goal. So that's it. It's really funny as well. It's once you write an album and you're like, I'm done with the album. It's mastered. Like that's the album. The like release you get from that, like literally physically you feel the pressure coming off your chest. You're like, oh my gosh, yes. And you just write probably a whole nother album.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. It might be shit, whatever it is. It doesn't matter, but you'll just like personally, I write just a lot more stuff.
Why is that?
It's, I guess it goes back to like when you first started writing music, there was no pressure. You had no fans, right? You had no like tour and tickets you needed to sell and all this kind of stuff. So you're like, I'm just writing because I'm writing music and that's what I'm doing. There's nothing else I'm doing here. But now it's like, well, I know what rooms I'm playing in the States and this album has got to do something to sell those rooms out. And that's what I think in the back of my head, where it's like, you shouldn't, you should be in here and relax and enjoy the writing process, which I think I really have this time. Not that I haven't the other times, but I've felt much less pressure this time. I think that might be because I've slightly pigeonholed myself a little bit. Like I just knew what I wanted this time a lot more than the other times.
Yeah. And what was that?
Records I could play in DJ sets. Full circle.
Dude, need to write a new album.
Yeah. That's it. That's it.
So good. That's so good.
But honestly, that like it's records that I would be comfortable playing in DJ sets that would slide in with other people, like with other stuff that I like playing too. I went in with that. I've come out with something a little bit different because guess what? Like that's just how the writing process works. Yeah. And I'm proud of that because it's like you didn't change who you are. You just like you've just shifted a couple gears or like you've turned a couple of things there and it's come out a little bit differently, which I love. Mm. But yeah, there's no more like, you know, like numb 75 BPM records for this one. It's all like, I think the slowest record is like 124 and the fastest is like 130.
Okay.
So it's in that pocket, and knowing that gave me, well, I've written like 60 records and I'm choosing like 10.
Yeah.
And they all just have to fit the criteria. Like one, is it a good song? Two, and sometimes you break the rules. You're like, you know what? This is just good. It's got to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. One, is it a good record? Two, would I be comfortable actually playing this record out? Three, would other people play it out? Which is actually not that important to me.
Yeah.
But four, people are going to just listen to it as well. Like I don't want to write a record that's going to alienate the people that want to listen to it while they're, you know, making a salad with wine, whatever it is.
Yeah. How long is that process to go from the 60 to the 10? How long is the process of like, of tick boxing all of those records?
It kind of just happens over the period of writing the records. Like I'll have a writing camp or something and just like have a whole bunch of collaborators in and come out with like 10 or 15 songs over like a week. But when I say songs, you know what I mean? Like there'll be demos or like bits and pieces or snippets of like, that could be something. And then you won't ever listen to them again. And they just sit in the pile. That's actually funny. There's a record, which I think could be my lead single, which was just sitting in the pile. And my label were like, hey, what's up with this? And I heard it again. I was like, holy shit. Like, wow, that's different. That's sick.
They're always the best ones.
I do listen to people.
No, they're always the best ones. Cause it's like,
I
remember with mine, I was in the studio with a guy called Mitch Jones, who I have wrote a lot of the album with, or he's helped me on certain things with it as well. And we were like, okay, let's just go back to the very first session. And we had a record and we were like, how did we forget about this?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like a 2 o'clock in the morning jobby where you just like, you're just writing a vibe and they're the important ones.
I think so. And you know, people always say it, but it's just the case. It's like the ones that you do just quickly and just like instinctively are the records that end up being like, wow, that's so sick.
I think it's also the process of writing the 60 records. It's like any career, right? It's like that whole, it's almost like a therapy. It's like that therapeutic of like just putting that work in and having to do the hours to achieve the 60 records, to achieve the 80 records, whatever, however many records you have to write to get the product that you want to get to. I think there's a process in that you have to do.
Totally. And like, you know, 30 of them can be like so horrible that you know, you'd never want to listen to them again. But that all, as you said, it's like that all counts.
Yeah.
You have to do that to get to the next part. I think the big thing as well, like for me when I write, is like, don't, if you're coming up with the same vibe and the same feeling, don't keep doing that. It's very easy to go into the same room with the same keyboard and figure out why things aren't working. It's like, what's going on? Just change your process a bit. One big thing I do as well is I go and write, not in my studio. I actually haven't written much in this studio at all.
Yeah.
It's more just being a listening hub, I guess. Like, but I do most of it like AirPods or just like just with my laptop. And I've got a whole like studio here and I like hardly use it because I enjoy being out doing, going to like my parents' place and just like sitting there when no one's there and just, you know, being in a different environment is really good.
That's interesting because I think that's, when did you find that you had to do that? Like at what point?
I think it was touring. It was traveling. It was like, because I was always, you know, wherever I was in the world, it was like, I just got used to that. Mm. And now I enjoy just like, well, that's all I need. It's a laptop, just a MIDI keyboard. I've got the sounds I need at the moment. If I need like the Prophet 5 or something like that, I can track that later. But usually it's just like, oh, I've just got the stuff in the box and I've created that feeling that I need. So, yeah. But there's, and for me as well, I'm very visual. So one thing I do all the time just to get a vibe on just playing chords is it'll always change. I'll go on YouTube and like, look, I'll type in like 10 best beaches in the world or something. And then just like turn the sound off and like watch and play.
Wow.
Yeah. Or like my favorite video clip or like a movie scene and just turn the sound off and just like score it. Mm. And you'll always come up with something that you probably wouldn't have if you're just sitting there, you know, just trying to write something. Just
trying to write something. Yeah. Cause I think we all have that go-to sound that we always go to, the go-to drum, the go-to chord progression, like
totally
it's the same. It's like
totally,
I remember doing like going into sessions with people, like I did a session with Dot from London Grammar and like I love London Grammar, like they're my favorite band.
Oh yeah, and her voice is just
she's unbelievable. Yeah,
yeah.
But like I when we were in the session, we like wrote this club record and then I was like, do you want to just play some keys, like put some keys down? And the minute he played, I was like, wow, that's a London Grammar chord. And like, it's, and everyone has these like signature sounds that we all need in our music. But I think it's sometimes it's how do you make that different so that people know that it's you, but also it's not copying what you've done for the last two albums.
Yeah. I find that like interesting, like people like, oh, you know, the Hayden James sound, the Will Clark sound, like, and I personally, like, I'm like, I don't really know what my sound, I just do my thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, and someone said, what's your sound? I always just end up saying like, I don't know, summer, housey, like, I don't know, just tick, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
But, people seem to know how to, express your sound, I guess, to you more than you do.
100%.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
Because I guess if you say, like, let's say for instance, like Rufus Du Sol, you know a Rufus Du Sol record from miles away, right? Like you know a Chemical Brothers record from miles away. The minute you hear that Chemical Brothers, like you can hear the drums, you can hear the bass lines, you can hear how they sound.
Just like straight away.
You just know it. So I think but I think it's easy when we have our own sound because we're doing it.
Exactly. You are that.
Yeah, we're that
entity. You're that person.
But like for us to describe that, it's like when people ask when people ask you to describe your sound, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not for us to say as well.
No, exactly. Exactly.
It's not for us.
Because no one asks us that anymore.
It's so boring. Such a boring question.
Yeah.
How do you feel the scene is at this moment in time? How do you feel the music industry is generally?
I think it's like probably more exciting than it ever has been because there's so much craziness going on. Mm. I don't know. It's hard to keep up. It really is.
Yeah.
I try and read quite a lot because if you're just looking at like the Beatport, you know, charts and all that kind of stuff, you're in this like tunnel vision. I try and just kind of, my manager gives me a lot of music, it doesn't have to be dance music. Just lots of different, he loves, you know, jazz and just all different stuff. So I don't listen to a lot of dance music. I listen to a lot of like Encanto and Luca and Peppa Pig and all that stuff, which is amazing, by the way. But I think especially the UK, there's just, you know, the Barry Can't Swims, the Sammy Virgies, like all these guys, like, you know, and obviously Fred and all that kind of stuff. It's just incredible. It's just exploding.
Yeah.
And it's so different, which is awesome. That's why I love it. It's like, whoa, that music is crazy. I would never think to write something like that in my life, and people are going nuts. Mm. It's just like, yeah, I love it.
Does that ever affect what you write in the studio for yourself, though?
No, no. It's just too different in a great way. And I think that if you'd started doing that, people would be like, what are you doing, bro? And you'd know yourself. You'd be like, oh, that's not the Hayden James sounds, you know, that's not it. So it doesn't affect it.
I think that's super important though, to be able to like sit back in and observe from an artist's perspective
and be a fan. And I'm just a fan. This is cool.
It's so important to be able to be a fan. It's hard though, isn't it? Have you ever come to a point where you're not a fan? Is there ever been a point in your career where you actually struggle to be a fan of it?
Just of my own stuff.
Okay.
And just when I'm writing is hard. So when we're talking about like writing 60 songs and making it, you know, turning it into 10, some days you'll write 10 of the worst songs of your life and you'll question everything you do. And you'll be like, oh my gosh, what have I done?
Yeah.
And it's scary because it's like, it's only you and it's, you know, that's the difficult time. And so what I do is just like leave the room, like take the headphones off and just like do something completely different. Like I love cooking. I love swimming. I love, you know, just going out and doing something else. And that clears the mind. And then sometimes, like, even with records, if you're having trouble with it, whatever, spend some time away from it. And I mean, like, months, you know, and you'll come back to it and be like, wow, that's a record. And you may have, like, ruined it if you tried to keep going.
Yeah.
Do you
take time off music generally? Is it a point where you're like, okay, I'm done writing for a certain amount of time?
I've never done that because I just enjoy writing.
Yeah.
But I don't spend a lot of time writing. Does that make sense? It's like, I'm not in here. Like my you know, the kids are not at school yet. Like I love hanging out with them. So we're like doing stuff all the time. And so I don't usually get like 5 days a week, 8 to 10 hours at least in the studio by myself, which I think is part of why I've found success, is because I'm not buckled in here, like, you know, trying to do stuff that isn't working.
Yeah.
I've got literally sometimes half an hour or maybe 2 hour block. And that is enough time to listen to that record again and go, oh no, that's the direction. Mm. That's it. Exactly. So that half an hour could have come to the same conclusion with an 8 hour block, you know? So I think that's a big thing for me and how my brain works when I write, is just like take some time away from it and then just come in here and like bang.
Limitations, you know, isn't it?
Big time. But then I'll spend a lot of time producing and mixing the like the records.
Yeah.
That takes a hell of a lot of time. But getting that initial, like, that's the song, is pretty quick. Because it's pretty quick. When I first started writing, it took me a while. After Something About You, I actually didn't release a record for like a year and a half, which is, imagine doing that now. Wow. It's like career suicide. It's like, it's crazy. Because of the pressure of like, holy crap, this song is like blown up. What do I do? And I was just, you know, just writing records and writing like 50 versions of one song. And you're like, oh, bro.
It's not good for that.
You're really hurting yourself here. Yeah.
But what was that pressure like?
It sucked. It was daunting and it was very difficult. But as well, I was such a young artist as well. It was like when I first started writing music. So I had that connection because I wrote that record that went well. But it was difficult to... Because you try and top it and it's like, well, don't try and do that. Yeah. I guess, you know, hindsight's, you know, it's a great thing. So yeah, now I don't do that. Now it's just like every journey is different and I enjoy it in a different way. But back then it was, I didn't really know what I was even doing.
Mm. And you're still having,
you know, to an extent,
extreme success.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is like, I don't, you know, I love my family life. I do a lot of touring, but I don't really get sucked into the the hype of stuff, and I don't have, like, all my mates are like from school, and like they don't really give a shit in a great way, you know?
Yeah.
So it's I've never really in my head, I've kind of got imposter syndrome, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
This, yeah, I don't find myself. But then when you go to a show and people kind of lose it when they meet you, it's like, what?
It's weird, isn't
like,
it?
I'm like you. I'm like, what are you, can I hang out with you? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning about my view on your career, though. It's a really interesting, from an outsider's point of view, it is really interesting of how you've carved your career out of something that shouldn't fit in a quintessential DJ world, if that makes sense. But you made it fit in a DJ, non-DJ world, and it works perfectly for you. And there's something beautiful about that that I think a lot of people don't even have the balls to do that.
Thanks, man. That's very nice. That means a lot. And I've just got to play my own records to do that.
Well, you got to write a new album now, because then that's literally the thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, but it's amazing to be a part of something. Yeah, to be a part of something, to be honest. And at the end of the day, that's the great thing is, like, we're all trying to do the same great thing, and it's just connect with people and write great music and build a community. And that's it. And that's why I'm such a big fan of, like, stuff that I don't even understand.
Yeah.
Even like Skrillex and stuff. I have no idea what he's doing. And I do the same thing. It's like, you know, it's awesome to be I think being a fan, like a music fan, is a great thing if you're an artist, obviously, because, you know, the appreciation you get from other people's talents and skills drives me. You know?
Totally. It's cool. Totally. I love that, man. And I think that's a perfect way to end this conversation on a positive.
Yes, always.
Dude,
always.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No worries. I think when this comes out, you have a new single coming out, from what I've been told.
Yes.
Tell people about that.
Yeah, now. Okay. It's this song coming out, I think it came out a couple of days ago, and it's called Make It. And it's actually the first, it's the first song that I've used a sample in. I went on Tracklib, because I actually got fed the Instagram ads. And I'm like, what is this all about?
Those ads are so good.
They're incredible. So I was like, oh, wow, I can do stuff like that. So I went on, and an hour later I was like, I've got a record here. So Tracklib. It's with a Sydney guy called Cormac. I've been a fan of his for many, many years. It's so good. And he's been helping me on the album as well with some production stuff and drum stuff. And, yeah, he's just incredible. So, this is our first collab called Make It. And, it's a belter.
Sick, man. Sick. Well, it's out. Go listen to it, people. How can people get involved with Hayden James? How can people follow you? How can people come and see you play?
Do all the stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Hayden James on Instagram, YouTube, X.
X. What's? Oh, yeah, Twitter.
Formerly known as.
That's so weird. That's so weird. Yeah, the platform would change. But can you remember when TikTok was Musical.ly?
No.
So TikTok used to be an app called Musical.ly.
Oh, wow. What?
Yeah. And then the Chinese blew it, and it changed to TikTok.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
Amazing.
There you go.
Right, dude. Thank you so much for being on.
Thanks, mate.
I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Peace. Fantastic.
And that's a wrap. Big love to Hayden for coming on. Absolutely loved it. If you listened, please subscribe, please share, please send it to everybody. Give us a little review. Love you lots. Till next time, people.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.